You're listening to Upfront. I'm Antonia Yuhas. 30 years ago, oil company Shell was warned in private that its own products were responsible for climate change, which in turn could lead to large-scale climate migration. Yet over the following decade, the company publicly justified the ongoing need for fossil fuels as the only realistic way to achieve sustainable development and lift vulnerable communities out of poverty. Shell knew that burning fossil fuels would alter the environment in such a way that it would affect parts of the world's habitability and could lead to new migration patterns. And this is just some of the information Bombshell released in two articles written and released by DSmog Blog UK, a nonprofit news, investigative journalism, and analysis organization that focuses on climate and energy issues based in Britain. Our guest today is the reporter of the stories, Chloe Ferrand. Chloe joins us today from London. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
In May, you and Mike Small broke the first story, what 30 years of documents show Shell knew about climate science, followed by a second piece, which you wrote just recently, Shell knew about climate migration 40 years ago. This is what it told the public. Tell us about first the source of these stories and then, you know, what you found, what made them significant.
Sure. So the documents were actually first obtained by Jelmer Mormers from De Correspondent, which is a news website in the Netherlands. And Jelmer obtained about 40 documents. Some of them were private, some of them were public documents, which looked and took a bit of a deep dive into what Shell knew about climate change as early as the 1980s and throughout the 1990s. So our stories at DSmog UK have really been analysing those documents, which are all made available on Climate Files.
And so to walk us through what these documents show, in essence, that Shell knew in the 80s that burning fossil fuels, its products, caused climate change and that those outcomes of climate change would be devastating. Tell us more about what you found.
So the documents are quite clear. There was in 1988, there was a confidential report published by Shell called The Greenhouse Effect. And that document sets out really clearly what Shell knew about climate change. And what's really striking about it is that it knew a great deal, and it was actually very accurate about a lot of it. And a lot of our current understanding of climate change isn't that far away from what Shell understood in the 1980s. At the time, Shell recognized that its own product and burning fossil fuels were responsible for global warming, were responsible for changing the climate, and that would have really significant impact not only on our biodiversity, our environment, but also on for things like migration patterns, on how we are able to live in some parts of the world, how big droughts and sea level rise might occur. So it was really a sort of broad brush understanding of what climate change was, what was it caused by, and what its effects might be.
And so many of our listeners are familiar with the case that's emerged with Exxon, dubbed Exxon New, based on similarly incredible investigative journalism that went through troves of documents that showed that Exxon knew early on that its products would damage the climate, that those impacts would be devastating. And then rather than act on that information, it chose to fund and foster uncertainty about the myth of uncertainty about the reality of climate change. And can you tell us what you found that Shell, which you're saying learned, had its own science that showed this similar information by at least the late 1980s, what it did with this knowledge that it gained?
Well, it didn't do much, actually, or at least not immediately. So the documents show that throughout the 1990s, actually Shell, although it acknowledged that climate change was happening, it also stressed that there was a lot of uncertainty around the science and sort of overstated the uncertainty and sort of climate skepticism that was around that science at the time. But it never really went into detail of its really good understanding of what climate change was in public. And that's really important. So what we found is that although they knew a great deal about it in private, what they put out to their shareholders, what they put out in the public domain, was quite constrained. And there's some really clear examples of things. Like, for example, as early in 1988, it recognized that its Shell's own products contributed around 4% of the world's CO2 emissions. Now, that actually wasn't made public until 2004. So that's 16 years later. In another instance, in 1988, it recognized that the combustion of fossil fuel may be changing the climate. It didn't come out officially with that position until the late 90s. So it took them a decade to come out with that information. So really, throughout the 90s, it sort of sat on its own knowledge, and didn't really share what it knew in private.
And your documents, your reporting also reveals the decision making within the company about why to not go public with that information. Can you talk about that?
I mean, there's probably plenty of reason why, the most obvious being, they have a huge vested commercial interest into exploring and selling fossil fuels. And I think they put the responsibility on not only the consumers, but also the governments to take action. So very early on, they recognize that action is needed around how we consume energy. But really, for them, the responsibility doesn't lie with them. So that's the first step. And a second step, and sort of justification for them probably not to put the information out there, was this uncertainty that they really overplayed, saying that actually they weren't that sure about the extent of the impacts of climate change or what sort of impact it could have in different parts of the world. Now, that again, actually, they knew quite well, since they made those statements in the late 80s. And throughout the 90s, Shell continued to justify in public the fact that it was using and producing fossil fuels because of the world's booming population. So Shell was saying, we have more people on the planet than ever before. More people are needing energy. There's a growing demand for energy. And so what we are doing is that we are providing this necessary energy to lift these people out of poverty, to help these countries develop, and to be able to raise standard of living. And that's how really it got away with its rhetoric in public, to continue to burn fossil fuels despite what it knew about climate change.
And this is the key issue. It's what it knew in private when, and then what it said publicly, and then which were quite different. And so, as you report, the leaked document, the leaked confidential document, one of the key ones from 1988, called the Greenhouse Effect, written by and for Shell, found by the time global warming becomes detectable, it could be too late to take effective countermeasures to reduce the effects or even halt the situation. And those effects that it was aware of were, quote, "There is reasonable scientific agreement that increased levels of greenhouse gases would cause global warming, and that such relatively fast and dramatic changes could impact on the human environment, future living standards, and food supplies, and could have major social, economic, and political consequences." And then in public, it was saying something very different. One of the things you link to in the article is that Shell at least maintained its membership in at least one climate denialist organization, ALEC, well past the date when other companies withdrew their support. Are there other instances? So we know that Exxon became a major funder of climate denialism, not just supporting climate denialism in its public statements, even when it knew the reality of climate change, but funding climate denialist organizations. Are there other examples, of Shell doing something similar?
Yes, I mean, I think it's really important to stress that although Shell knew about, climate change, the solution it was advertising for and pushing for and actually even lobbying for in the next decade, in the 1990s, was still very much, we need to expand and support production of oil and gas. And during that time, Shell put a lot of lobbying efforts into pushing for, you know, better regulation, or sort of more deregulation, you know, better tax environment, and all these things through the political system to try and get a favorable environment to continue and actually increase the production of oil and gas. And I think people will know that Shell, you know, has taken part or at least supported some different trade organizations such as the American Petroleum Institute and others, which have done clear, which have been clear obstructors to campaigns on climate, to pushing good message on climate change, and to taking robust climate action. So actually, there's a real discrepancy between the internal knowledge it had, its external communication, but also the actions it was taking. And actually, it was in a way for about a decade throughout the 1990s, acting in a way that was completely opposite to what it knew it should be doing.
And this is the point that's also at the heart of two of the legal approaches to what Exxon knew and when it knew it. One is cases that are targeting, did Exxon mislead its investors by knowing one thing internally about what the harm that its products caused, but reporting information differently to its investors? And it sounds like you're saying that Shell may have also done the same thing, known one thing internally about the harm its products caused and would cause, but not sharing that information and rather saying the opposite, all the benefits that could be derived from its products.
I definitely think the documents obtained by the correspondent could form the basis of evidence in to illustrate that kind of claim, that actually Shell kept that information for itself for a very long time. It eventually came out, but we're talking, you know, a decade on, 15 years on. And I think they, you know, definitely these documents are coming in a very sensitive time, at a time when climate litigation is growing and booming, and there are more and more cases regarding what companies knew, what they did. Shell itself is, you know, facing a court case in the Netherlands over setting more robust climate targets. That's a case that Friends of the Earth said it would be taking after, at its last AGM, it announced that actually more than 90% of its investments were still going to fossil fuels, despite everything it knows, despite knowing about it, you know, 30, 40 years ago, and despite the current climate. So I think these documents definitely add to what's already out there and maybe could be used as evidence in a court of law, possibly against Shell.
Yeah, I guess the next question then would be looking at, in the United States, what Shell reported to the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission in its what's called its 20F form to see how that does or does not correspond to these documents showing that it knew, again, as you've reported, as early at a minimum of 1988 about the full impacts of what burning fossil fuels causes to the environment. Can you talk briefly about your second story on climate migration and what motivated you to write that second piece from these documents?
So it really stood out when I was reading the documents. There's a few things that really stood out for me. And one of them was that as early as 1988, Shell was mentioning climate migration. I mean, more than mentioning it, really, understanding that climate migration would be both a consequence of climate change, but also maybe a necessary solution for people that would be affected by sea level rise or droughts. Now, that's quite surprising because this is really early on. I mean, the concept and ideas around climate refugees, climate migration are fairly new. There's a stream of research on it that's still developing, and it's a very complex theme which is, you know, interlinked with plenty of other factors as well. But yet, as you know, as early as the late 1980s, Shell was already identifying Bangladesh, for example, as a place where sea level rise would cause would create new migration patterns, would cause people to leave their homes, and actually a social economic crisis as a result. So I did a story looking at what Shell knew about climate migration at the time, back in the 1980s, and then it's sort of rhetoric around population growth, the growing demand for energy, and Shell's business strategy, or Shell's mission to provide that energy to developing countries and help these people out of poverty, which is a bit ironic because at the same time, it also acknowledged that its own product could have a really devastating impact on these same vulnerable communities, like in Bangladesh. So the story on Desmog UK's website really looks at this nexus between migration, energy demand, and population.
Well, it's such a critical story, and of course, you know, what the issue that strikes me is the time lost to the public to make informed decisions about what we should do about the impact of burning fossil fuels and addressing climate change, and how the soapbox that oil giants like Shell and Exxon have to spread their message through advertising, through campaign finance of elected officials that support their positions, through the funding of organizations to fund climate denialism, for example, at a minimum in the case of Exxon, that filled a space of public dialogue that could have instead been filled with the information that they themselves had and given us an extra 20 years to act on climate change and make informed, much more informed decisions as a public about what we wanted to do about climate change and here and burning fossil fuels. And here in the Bay Area, for example, in California, there are a number of lawsuits that our cities are engaged in right now that include targeting Shell as well as other oil companies for the extreme costs that we've had to bear for dealing with issues of climate change, sea level rise, fires, floods, and that the oil companies bear responsibility for helping us overcome those costs. But this adds a whole nother piece and a whole nother dimension to those suits, which is not only that their products cause these impacts, but that they knew, you know, 20, 30 years ago, and then didn't put that information out into the public domain. So I just think this reporting is so crucial. And you've also mentioned that there'll be more stories on the way that listeners should be looking out for.
Absolutely. So Desmog UK has decided to really examine and scrutinize these documents as much as we can, really. I think there's a lot of information in those documents, which show that Shell knew a great deal and had actually amazing foresight, because a lot of the things they said back in the 1980s turn out to be true, or, you know, is basically very close to our understanding of climate impacts today. And I think that really should be pointed out. So we're still working on a few stories around this discrepancy between what they knew in private, what they said in public, around a range of different topics, including lobbying, including things on renewable energy. So there's plenty more to look out for on the Desmog UK's website over the coming weeks. And the other thing I would just say is that Shell responded to us when we did that story, and I think it's fair to give them a voice here. But their defense is that what they knew was not unique knowledge, and that climate change was already in the public discourse, and that they were part of that discourse. I think what they were referring to here was a film they put out in 1991 called climate concerns. But that actually, in a way, highlights also the fact that, yes, they knew, but they did not act according to what they knew. And so we at DSMOG UK are really trying to go a bit deeper into understanding this this rhetoric behind what Shell was saying in public.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much. Chloe Ferrand is with the UK-based DSMOG blog. There's also a US-based DSMOG blog. And thank you for your reporting. Thank you for joining us today from London. And we look forward to more stories to come.
Thank you very much.